adieu to you fair Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we've received orders for to sail back to Boston, and so nevermore shall we see you again.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. And on this week's show, we're going to be talking about the 1975 film Jaws. But before we get into that, let me go around and see who's with us. My name is Sean, and as usual, my good friend Rob Flack O'Hara. What's going on, Flack?
Oh, what, are you there? Sorry, I've been on vacation all week, so sorry, I'm kind of in laid-back mode.
Laid-back, like, just that's all you're doing is laying around, getting up late?
Laid back, like, I got in trouble yesterday because my wife left me a to-do list for the vacation. I've been going through things, and this is true. Yesterday, I admitted to her that I had cereal, but instead of milk, I filled it full of vanilla iced coffee because we were out of milk. And she is like, okay, you're done. Like, I've been kind of cut off from my vacation. So she's now leaving me lists of things. Not really like, hey, fix this or do this, but it's more like you will wake up, you will put clothes on, that sort of thing. So that's what my vacation to-do list has turned into.
Did you really put that in your cereal?
I really did. Yeah, I had coffee or iced coffee, and then it was brown, and I was like, it looks like chocolate milk.
what was the cereal?
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, which I also got in trouble for eating all of the Cinnamon Toast Crunch. So from my perspective, it's been a great vacation. I'm not sure that my wife shares that opinion.
Has there been a lot of mustard in your vacation, too?
There was, yeah. I was it's funny because I just put on a clean shirt for the podcast because I don't know if listeners know, but we have cameras, so we can see each other when we're recording. And my wife said, before you go up there to record, you might want to change shirts because that shirt has mustard on it, and you haven't even eaten anything today with with mustard, which is true. Yep. We had hot dogs yesterday, so all right. So here I am. I'm all out of iced coffee. I switched to margaritas. That seems like I haven't put any in the cereal yet. But I'm going to try that tomorrow. We've got some Lucky Charms left, and I know where the margarita and the tequila is. So I think I just invented a new breakfast.
Well, yeah. I mean, tomorrow's Friday, so you know your work vacation is kind of technically over. So you got to live it up tomorrow.
Right. You know, you got to set the bar for the next one.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
Well, I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to introduce our next guest, and then I have a little announcement, which pertains to him as well. So with us tonight is Kevin Zerb, also known, as you may know him, as the Zerbinator from Zerbinator Land Podcast. He's got multiple shows. But Kevin, how you doing?
Doing wonderful. I wish I was doing as well as Rob was doing, too. I don't have any mustard on my shirt. I do have a chocolate... What comes from a chocolate ice cream cone? So I do have a smudge of that on, and I didn't change my shirt. So it's a good thing you can't see me on camera.
Oh, like the cone that's dipped in chocolate?
Yes.
That kind of?
Oh, yes. Those are good.
And I had that with the Edie's Grand French Silk. So that's always a decadent, lovely dessert. And that's the extent of my vacation. So my real vacation doesn't start for a while, but doing very well. And thank you so much for having me on tonight. I'm looking forward to this.
Absolutely. And what I want to talk about is the Throwback Network. We actually just added a few of your shows, 80 to 89, which is a new podcast that you started. Mm-hmm. And look it.
No, that's fine.
But why don't you go ahead and tell everybody what those shows are about and even talk about, because you have a bunch of different shows.
Oh, my gosh. I don't even remember what half of them are, but the Look It podcast is something I started out of falling in love with the Retroist podcast and a lot of the other retro podcasts that I listen to. And I wanted to try one myself, and I've always loved toys that I had when I was a little kid. It's hard to find those toys nowadays, so I figured I would talk about those and reminisce about them via podcast. And 80 to 89 was an idea of just trying to relive the 80s from 1980 until 1989 as they're happening. So I'm recording those actually on... I have two cassette recorders. One is an old Sony, and the other is an old Radio Shack cassette recorder. And I'm recording them to cassette, trying to... It's hard to live the 80s to 89 when I was actually 10 until 19, and now I'm doing them at 40-something. So I have to somehow relive a childhood as a grown man, and that's kind of rough. But I get to also enter in everything that happened politically, technology, you know, games, and everything, and just try to live it as it's happening in 1980. And that's what I'm attempting to do with 80 now, to 89.
When I first heard that show, I was like, are these... Because it sounds, just like what you said, it sounds like a cassette recording.
It is.
And yeah. I was like, is this like post-production? Like, is there some kind of plug-in he's done? Or are these really tapes from the 80s or whatever? And eventually, if you listen to it long enough, you know, there are, well, not to spoil it, but there's a reference to a story I had told on another podcast. And I was like, okay, either there's some weird time travel stuff going on here. But I legitimately thought at the beginning that this, I mean, and it, there is something, if you grew up listening to cassettes, you know, I've been converting all my old cassettes over into MP3s lately. And there's a sound that there's no other, I mean, there's nothing else that sounds like that. So it really, I mean, it does immediately take you back into that headspace from the 80s.
Oh, beautiful. Good. I'm glad it's doing. That's what I was shooting for. Cause yeah, there's a program that I use to write music, and it's called Propelhead's Reason. And there is a cassette rack system, but it really doesn't match. And it isn't as easy to use as just taking a cassette player, plugging the earpiece into your sound card and just going for it. And it works better that way. It's just much easier.
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes the simplest solutions work out the best for sure.
Exactly. Exactly.
So on the 80 to 89, is each one a year or going to be a month, or how are you going to do that?
I'm going to do this month to month, and I'll see how long I can go. The really good stuff really doesn't begin for about a year and a half now, so it's going to take a while to do it. But the one that I'm working on now, I finally got to see Empire Strikes Back, because when it did come out, it was only showing in D.C., and I lived in the D.C. area, but you could only go to the Kennedy Center to watch it.
Oh, okay.
And it took forever to get to the other theaters, and I have to report it like that. So that's what I did. I'm going to be singing down the top 10 songs for that week. But if you guys remember back then, songs remained in the top 10 for quite a few months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of hard to, it's not like every month there was a, well, there wasn't that many musicians like there are now, you know? And there wasn't any genres. It was like maybe five genres to listen to. So, that's always hard. I'm going to have to figure out a way to sing them faster or something. Yeah. I don't know.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because, as you know, I put those MP3s of the cassettes. I have cassettes that are just called, you know, 1984. And then there's one that says 1984 cool songs.
Yeah.
And one says 1984 radio edit. I don't even know what that means, but apparently, you know, so I have my own little labeling system. And so I've been playing those for my kids in the car. And the two things that they mentioned, one was exactly what you just said, was that there's so many, I mean, you're going to have, you know, a Prince song, followed by, you know, maybe a rap song, followed by Huey Lewis, followed by Cindy. I mean, it's like every type of genre was pop music back then.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
So, you know, it just jumped. I mean, to Twisted Sister is on mm-hmm. there, you know, so you've got Rat, and, you know, so you've got, I would not necessarily heavy metal, but let's say hard rock all the way to cheesiest pop, you know, and ballads. And the other thing they mentioned was, they said, boy, they sure used to talk a lot more on the radio. And they did, you know, I mean, like the local DJs, they've all got their little funny banter and this and that, and they're always giving the weather and stuff. And now, you know, you just don't really hear that as much.
No, you don't. You don't get to hear that. And, calling in to hear whatever song you wanted to listen to is virtually gone. That's gone. And, I miss that. I really miss that.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a great show. I look forward to listening to all those upcoming episodes. And as somebody who grew up through the 80s, and like Sean, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners did, it's definitely a jump in the Wayback Machine.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And thank you for putting me on the Throwback Network. Thank you so much. I'm honored to be on there.
Oh, we're glad to have you.
Oh, yes.
I appreciate it.
Excited about it. And also, we actually added another podcast about a week or two ago. We have the 10 Pence podcast. Some of our friends over the pond. And Lock is Lit is on there. And by the time this comes out, we should also have the Retro Obscura podcast will be on the network. So we are
nice,
man. We're getting huge.
We are cornering the market on retro games and and pinball. You know, Lock is Lit is a great, great pinball show. There's a lot of pinball shows, but some of them get into so much detail. I'm not a pinball guy as far as like fixing them or, you know, working on them or anything, but I like playing pinball and they, you know, talk about different tables and they've done some interviews. So that's a really cool show and it's got a broad audience, you know, so that one's good. And 10 Pence, someone described them to me as the, British version of No Quarter. And they are in a way, I mean, they're doing a similar type show, but, especially once you start listening to them, they definitely have a, that kind of British sense of humor. And they've done some really cool, they've doing some cool games and stuff too. So, both of those shows are really cool.
Beautiful.
Yep. So everybody, head on over to Throwback Network and check out all the shows we got going on over there.
We need somebody to start some, retro. What do we need? We need like a retro. I want a retro cartoon show. Somebody should start that. Retro yes. Cartoons. Retro. We have some movie stuff and I like hearing the movies, but, I don't know, some toy show. We need some other retro type things.
Toys, cartoons. That would be great. That would be,
even the store. On that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking stores and companies that don't exist anymore. Old record stores, old, other 7-Eleven type stores like Highs and things like that that doesn't exist anymore.
Well, we'll have to see what happens, what comes our way. But why don't we go ahead and get started with our little review of Jaws, which was released June 20th, 1975, directed by Steven Spielberg. I think everyone knows who that is. Mm-hmm. The screenplay by Peter Benchley, who wrote the novel, correct?
I think so.
Yep. In fact, there's some interesting things, and we're going to talk about these later, but, you know, Peter Benchley, actually was into oceanography and got into, you know, writing this. And then after Jaws came out, he learned a lot more about sharks and the ocean. And, I've read some articles about him and he pretty much spent the rest of his life regretting that he had written Jaws because he's basically the person who single-handedly gave great yes. white sharks a bad name. And he said he felt terrible about it for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Wow. Unlike
yeah,
us, we've given podcasts a bad name. But I don't feel bad about it.
No guilt. Yeah. No guilt.
You know yeah, what? Mustard on a sleeve. That's what I say.
And also the music by none other than John Williams.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorites. And hey, Rob, why don't you talk about the budget for this film?
Yeah, the budget was originally $3.5 million, and shooting was set for 55 days. However, by the time they were done, the budget had ballooned to $9 million and had shot for 150-something days. So it actually went 100 days over schedule. And what is that? $6.5 million. Now, obviously, wow. In retrospect, we know now that, it paid off. Jaws, brought in a lot of money. It looks here like, the box office earnings were just over $470 million. I read today that adjusted, with inflation, that's about $2 billion in today's money. It is the second most successful, series of movies behind Star Wars. So it is, it was amazingly, profitable. But of course, Steven Spielberg was, I think, 26 years old at the time and was not a known director. This movie, you know, almost tripled in budget. It almost didn't get complete. So there were a lot of production and money problems. But like we said, it did pay off. It earned back, almost 50 times, you know, what the budget was. And this was, or is considered by a lot of people to be the first summer blockbuster. And this is something that, at guys our age, I don't really remember this, but, back then the summer was a time where you dumped movies that you didn't think were going to be popular, and your best movies from the studio, they would release around Christmas time.
Right.
And so this kind of turned that around, you know, they were, it made a huge splash. this show is going to be so full of, we have many tales to tell.
Fishy.
There's going to be some fishy.
This podcast is about to jump the shark right now.
Everybody bail out, man.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we are over the gill.
All right, let's fins this. Come on.
As people came back and told their friends about it and came back, I mean, it really turned around and probably affected Star Wars being released in the summer a couple of years later. So it was kind of the first summer blockbuster.
Wow. Beautiful.
And probably ruined a lot of summer vacations at the beach.
I read a newspaper article. I was doing some research today, and there was a measurable decrease in beach vacations the summer of 1975, which is directly attributed to this film. And I believe it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, so let me ask you guys, what was your introduction to this film, or, you know, your exposure as a kid? Did you see it? I'm sure most people have seen this movie, but how did it affect you, Rob?
I saw this movie, I think when, like a lot of the movies we talk about, when it aired on cable, so probably HBO, and I saw it when I was pretty young. And, after seeing it, I was afraid to take a bath because I thought somehow Jaws was going to come up through the drain and get me. I was terrified of Jaws. And, there's a lake pretty close to us called Lake Thunderbird. We all call it Lake Dirty Bird because it's just this, muddy mess, you know, and it smells like dead catfish. And, it's just like, they're so dirty and that you can't see in the water. And, my mom would take us there and I would be terrified that Jaws was going to get us. And I mean, this is a lake in the middle of Oklahoma. So unless he's, you know, riding a moped out here to the Midwest, I was probably safe, but that didn't matter to me as a little kid. I was terrified. I didn't want to go in the water. This summer we took a vacation to Florida, and one of the things we did was snorkeling. And so we got on a boat and they took us out like 8 miles, because it's not very deep. They go really far out, but it's not deep. I mean, it's like 10 foot deep or something. And you've got this stupid mask and these fins or whatever, and they say that they'll give you instructions, and then the instructions are keep the thing you breathe over the top of the water and keep your face in the water. That's the instructions you get. So it wasn't like a college course in snorkeling. But the minute I got out there, I had flashbacks to this stupid movie. I mean, I started looking. I'm like, you know, we're out in the middle of the dang ocean. You know, there could be, I mean, obviously, Amity is up in the Northeast, but you never know. Jaws, maybe he ate everything up there and now he's coming down south, you know. But it was a strange feeling being in the middle of the ocean and all of a sudden thinking that there could be sharks out here.
Yeah. And as they say, they attack, what, in like 3 feet of water, like 10 feet off the shore?
Mm-hmm. It's true. And you know, amity does mean friendship. I just want you to know that.
The only things I know about Amity are this takes place in Amity, and then you have the Amityville Horror. So if I ever go on a vacation and it's somewhere away. Amity, right, I'm leaving. I'm turning right around. There's no friendship for me. I'm done.
Amity getting out of here. That's what I'm
saying. Yeah, that's right. So how about you, Zerb? How did this affect you as a kid?
Very, very well. When I was a child, I remember seeing it for the first time when I was sick. And when we were sick, we were lucky we would get the TV set in the bedroom. And I'm pretty sure I was 10 years old, so it had been about 1980 when I first saw it. And I remember it. I don't think it was on HBO, although we had it. But I think I saw it on regular TV because the opener had the lady swimming, but it was all boxed out and fuzzy because she was naked. So I remember that. I was like, what are they hiding? Was there blood? Was there something? I didn't know. I was 10. And, so I remember that aspect, but, the effect it had on me, the ocean, I wouldn't go in the water, all the way up till now. I mean, up here, we moved up to Connecticut. We just came from the ocean this past weekend. And even then I'm looking deep out in the ocean, just checking for fins before I get in. Mm-hmm. And I still do it. And I'm 43 years old. So I'm looking and I go out into the water, you know, probably about 20, 30 feet away from the shoreline. And I'm, you know, waiting in the water and I'm just, you know, reaching down with my toe, make sure nothing's there, you know, still to this day. So I'm always checking for sharks out there in the deep part of the water.
As well you should, yes.
Not always. Because a big massive one. The biggest part that stuck in my mind is the being underwater and seeing out into the murky water, and then you, in the distance you see that little tiny speck of what looks like a guppy. Or let's start even with a minnow. Then it turns into a guppy, then a bass, and all of a sudden you've got this big shark coming at you at full speed. And that always scares me. So whenever I open my eyes underwater, I'm like, do I see anything over there or not?
Well, like I think I could take a shark on dry land. You know what I mean? Like I could probably beat up a shark that's laying in my driveway. But in the water, I got a 50-50 shot. Let's say that.
Right. They do, you know.
Right. he drives his moped, knocks on my door, and it's a land shark. But in the water, you're in their territory. Yeah. I mean, you know, you watch I always watch Shark Week, which is, you know, just really re-exposing myself to trauma every year. And – you watch them and they're so graceful and they're so fast. And I am neither of those things in the ocean. I am like a wounded buoy with one flipper trying to get out of the way.
Going in circles.
When we did our snorkeling thing, they warned us that there were jellyfish out there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's the last thing I need in my life is to touch a jellyfish, you know? And everything I know about jellyfish really came from SpongeBob anyway. So, but I do know that they're supposed to hurt greatly. And so sure enough, I'm like, hey, look at that. There's a piece of plastic over there. And they're like, no, you moron. That's a jellyfish. Don't go over there. And so I'm like, and I'm trying to get away and I'm kicking my feet and I'm doing the thing and I'm trying to keep the tube up. So I'm breathing and I'm not getting away from it. You know, I mean, the wind is moving it as fast as I can move through the water. And, you know, and it comes back to that feeling. It's almost like a nightmare where, you know, when you're walking into the wind and you're like trying to walk and you can't move and you think, you know, here's this, I mean, a shark is just a streamline killing machine with 8,000 teeth on the front of it. Mm-hmm. And my fat ass in the ocean trying to get away from it. I'm not going to be able to do it.
Just change your name to hors d'oeuvre because it's going to happen.
I think so, right? You know what? They can smell mustard from 3 miles away, I've heard.
Exactly. And,
so I'm in trouble.
Well, you know, I just got back from vacation myself. Last week we were down at the shore in Jersey, Ocean City. And this was actually the first time for me where I was kind of okay with it until we would go to bed at night and I'd be laying in bed and I'm like thinking of all the, you know, when a shark could have came up at me. But when I was there, I had such a good time. But growing up, probably the same as Rob. Like, I grew up, you know, just outside of Buffalo. I grew up on the Niagara River, which is a fairly large sized river, feeds into Niagara Falls. And, as kids, you know, we weren't supposed to, but we would go tubing in the summer once in a while. Some neighborhood kids, my, you know, parents would be at work, and, whenever I would, I didn't like my feet dangling in the water because I would think that, but the minute, like, maybe say my brother tipped a tube or whatever, and I was in the water, submerged in that dark water, I would instantly hear the da-dun, da-dun, da-dun. Hearing that music in your head as a kid, it just, I mean, it would just freak me out. And I was the same way, Rob. Not so much in the bathtub, but we did have, we had a pool. And even that, sometimes I would get that little freaked out feeling, you know. That's actually why I started swimming with my eyes open, was because I needed to see what was going on.
You know, there are a lot of, when it comes to horror, there are a lot of memorable scenes. I know a lot of people, I think one of the top scenes, is the shower scene from Psycho, you know, and a lot of people cite that as being a really scary, scene that affected them. But in reality, the odds of you getting stabbed by a crazy guy in a motel in your shower is pretty slim, you know, but something, I mean, this movie, sharks are real. Like, we know that there are sharks. Like, I've been to the aquarium and they got sharks there. So I know that there are sharks and they're big and they eat things that are alive, and I'm something that's alive. And so, you know, I mean, it's a very real scenario. Now, obviously, right, coming in my bathtub is probably not going to happen, but, you know, I mean, you go out on vacation on the ocean and, you know, you just have to think, just because the part, you know, I mean, if their fins not up, it's a deep ocean. You know what I mean? They could be just below the surface. So
right,
that's what I think. I think I've probably escaped death many times. I think they're circling. I'm going to check my bathtub right now.
Well, enough about how much of pussies we are. Why don't we, I don't think we really need to do this. So I know, Rob, you have kind of a compressed version, but why don't you go ahead and just give a quick summary of Jaws, and then we'll go through and talk about some of the scenes that really kind of stood out to us.
Sure. Well, Jaws, as we know, it sets the tone in the opening scenes of the movie when a vacationing teenage girl named Chrissy goes skinny dipping in the ocean just off the shore of Amity Island and ends up as our first shark victim. A few days later, what's left of Chrissy is discovered on the shore by Police Chief Brody. And Brody wants to close the beach, which would be detrimental to Amity's thriving summer tourism business, but he's talked out of it by the mayor. That's Mayor Vaughn. So they leave the beach open, which immediately backfires as a second victim is eaten by the shark. So this leads to a bounty being put on the shark's head. And so all these people come into town to try to claim this reward and go kill Jaws. So there are some local fishermen that do eventually find a shark, and they declare it to be the shark that everyone's been looking for. Even though there's a visiting oceanographer named Hooper that tells everyone that is not the shark that they're looking for, and the shark they're looking for is much larger. So eventually Hooper, Police Chief Brody, and the salty, hardened local Quint set out on Quint's boat, the Orca, to put an end to Jaws' shark's reign of terror over Amity Island.
Beautiful. All right.
I don't want to spoil the end of it, but there's a lot of blood.
Yes, yes, there is. So we'll just go over the main characters here. You know, we have Roy Scheider, who plays Chief Brody, real good family man, wants to do the right thing from the beginning of the movie when this all comes to head in the beginning, really wants to do the right thing. So a very likable character. Actually, I think most of them are kind of likable, except for, we'll go with, Murray Hamilton, who played the mayor, who did not really care about the safety of the town. All he cared about was the fact that the island would lose all this income from all the, summer vacationers coming in. We had Robert Shaw, plays Quint, the shark hunter. Awesome character. Richard Dreyfuss, playing Matt Hooper, the wealthy oceanographer, another very likable character in this movie. I know, again, Rob, like you said, from reading up on the movie, I never read the novel, but from what I've heard of his character in the novel, not so likable for some reasons. And we have Lorraine Gary, who plays the Chief Brody's wife, Ellen Brody. And I'd say that's about the main characters. We also have Bruce, the shark, right?
Yeah. The infamously named Bruce after Spielberg's lawyers. And I have actually seen one of the mechanical sharks that they used in this. At the Museum of Science and Industry up in Chicago, they have a traveling exhibit of movie special effects. And so I guess there's a couple of different sharks, but there's one that was basically, if you look at it from the side, a side view, it looks like a shark, but on the other side of it, all the mechanical parts are exposed. And that's the one of the ones I saw. And it, you know what? It's just as scary as a real shark.
Wow.
Except for it was, you know, on a pedestal in a museum. So I felt fairly safe.
And you were on land, so you had a 50-50 chance.
Exactly. I thought, say, don't look at me with the black eyes there, buddy.
Take him to your driveway and show him what's going on.
Exactly.
What you'll do.
So, you know, this movie, like most of the movies we talk about on the show, I also saw on HBO. And because I was a kid, it creeped me out. I didn't really get an appreciation for the story or the actual characters in the movie, the actors. I thought the acting in this movie was really, really well done. But what it did is it kind of gave me that fear of the unknown, you know, because in the movie, you don't really see Jaws completely until probably midway through when they're on the Orca on their hunt. So the people that get hit, like Chrissy, the first person that gets killed by the shark, there's no, like in a typical horror movie, like you hear the noise or something, like something banging and the person's like, what was it? There was nothing like that. She's just swimming them. Boom. Hers seemed to be, I think she got hit by the shark and then she's trying to swim away. So there was that little bit of suspense, but there was no knowing it was coming. And same with Alex, the little boy who, when my son watched the movie, was a little upset by that because, you know, he thought kids aren't supposed to die in movies. So, but there was,
oh no.
In the 70s, they did. We don't kill them now, but back then they were fair game.
But I think that it was part of that whole uneasiness when you were swimming in a lake or a pond or something, because it could just happen. You know, there was no warning signs to it.
Exactly. You don't see it coming, and that's something. And Steven Spielberg said that he wanted that, he didn't want the shark to show up right in that opening scene. He didn't want to have anybody see anything. And he knew that would be more scary than just showing the whole thing in the beginning, you know, having a shark come up and just take her out.
Right. Well, if you've ever been, even in a swimming pool at night, that's not lit, all of a sudden the water just turns black, you know, and you can't see down in there. And that opening scene to me is the scariest scene of the movie. And that's the one that bothers me the most when I rewatch this movie. And you know that you've got this girl and she's, you know, she's screaming, it hurts and, you know, just, yelling for help. And of course her boyfriend that was going to go skinny dipping with her is passed out on the beach. So he's left her out there alone. But, just that, there is nowhere to get away. I mean, you're in the ocean and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're completely helpless at that point. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Some of the scenes for me, and one of them, that I thought was really, really well done. And it was when after Hooper had come and he wanted to examine the remains of Chrissy, because you remember there's the part where the coroner on, the island tells Chief Brody that it was a shark attack. So then he wants to try and, like I said, do the right thing, shut everything down, where the mayor steps in. And it was kind of like a mafia type thing where they get to the witness to change their story.
Yeah, because they're strong arm him. Yeah.
Yeah, because then the coroner's like, no, it was a boat accident. Mm-hmm. And Brody brings in a specialist, which is Hooper, played by Richard Dreyfuss. And you see a part of the remains, I think her arm real quick. But his reaction to when they uncover and just talking about the flesh being torn, I thought it was much more effective that way than if they were like, now we're just like to pull it and you're staring at this fake image of a body left over.
With the scene with her laying even in the sand with the crabs walking all around her. That was perfect. And all you saw was the head, the hair, and a little bit of an arm. And that's really all you needed. The reaction from the actors is what made that. Right. So,
yeah. One of the deputies. I mean, he was right. Just looked like he was
scraping his key in the sand and he was crying a little bit and had his hand over his mouth. You know, it's very well done.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I think the acting in this movie was really, really well done. Mm-hmm. The other part was, you know, when, was it the 4th of July? I think it was the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. I think this is after Alex's attack possibly, but, when they see the shark and he's going to go to, I think they call it the pond or something.
Yeah.
And the hysteria that's going on and these grown men that they're showing in the water, just pushing over women, children, this to the fear that was in these guys. Because that's the thing, you don't know how you're going to react. I mean, it just seemed very, realistic.
Yeah.
That scene.
Everybody for themselves, plow through because this thing is going to tear us all apart. And if you're slowing me down, I got to get you out of my way. That's what they were thinking.
Yeah. You just got to be faster than some of the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it's sad, but it just, I don't know. That scene I thought was pretty interesting that way. How about you, Rob? Anything on those scenes or any other thing, you know, parts?
No, I think it is kind of scary, that hysteria when all of a sudden everybody's running out of the ocean. And then there's what a gut-wrenching as anybody that, that's a parent, you know, that has small kids, where there's that one lady left who's looking for her son. You know, that's a rough scene.
When Alex, when he's killed by the shark. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, even that, the opening scene, like what you were saying, it, less is more, I think, in those scenes. And, you know, there's a lot of things in this movie that it's hard to know if they were intentional or, man, if they just got lucky, you know, because that opening victim, I mean, who is more sympathetic than a hot 18-year-old naked girl? You know, I mean, there's nobody rooting against that girl, you know, like we all want her to make it through the rest of the film. And I, as a kid, and of course I grew up watching, you know, a lot of, Disney movies and a lot of kid movies and stuff. So when you start watching a movie, I would think, you know, if something dangerous happened, I go, well, that person's not going to die because they're the star and we've met this person and we know that they're going to make it to the end. So even if there's, you know, in Indiana Jones, in the first 5 minutes, there's a boulder that's coming down on him and arrows and things, but we're like, this is our hero, you know? And so this movie, right off the bat, you're like, oh, here's this teenager. We've met this girl and oh my gosh, she just got ate by a shark. You know? So, I mean, it sets that tone of nobody's safe in this movie. No, you know, I mean, it's them against the shark. And even, you know, towards the end, the main protagonists, we're afraid for them that they're not going to make it.
Right. I watch this. I try to watch it towards the end of winter just because I'm looking forward to summer. And I have the 30th anniversary. We're coming up on the 40th anniversary, by the way.
Is that amazing?
Yeah. Next year. But I have the 30th anniversary DVD, so I watched that. And it's almost tradition. And there's still parts where I've seen it. I must have seen it at least, I'll say 20 times. And I still stop and I put my little thumb up to my lip going, is that guy going to make it? No, he's not. He's not. I thought this time for sure, you know, cause he's done this so many times and he still doesn't get it. And, it's just an amazing movie. Just an amazing movie. The best part, I think, is just the fact that your imagination gets to work a little more over time. And at the same time, you still get your eyes fed as the movie progresses because you get to see this massive thing attacking people.
Yeah. I have read, and I think this might be on the special features, and I didn't rewatch those this time, but I know that I've seen this somewhere, where they said that they wanted originally the shark to be more in the movie, but they had such a problem mm-hmm. with the mechanical sharks, and they were, you know, behind and so over on their filming that, you know, there were scenes, there were parts of the opening where they had planned on showing Jaws, but instead they switched to that point of view shot
right.
where the camera's just going through. And that's kind of what I was talking about with these, you know, just lucky, not even a choice, but just things that worked out, you know, because that is so much scarier looking through the eyes of the shark than it would be to have, you know, any type of footage or whatever of the shark going through, because it's so dark, you wouldn't want to see him anyway.
Right.
How do you think this would be as a remake? I mean, I know we've talked about that before. I know personally, I don't really like to see, I want to say quote, our movies, being remade.
Right.
But I don't think that they could do this movie and, have it be as successful. I mean, because it would be all the CGI, the parts that we talked about where Hooper's doing the autopsy and you're getting that verbal description. Like I don't think it would be like that. I think you would actually see a torn more, you know what I mean? It would be more of a mangled body. Zurb, like you said, on the beach, you'd see more of a mangled body in the netting and the crabs probably really, eating the flesh. And I mean, what do you guys think this is even something aside from feelings of not wanting to see movies remade. Do you think it could be as successful as it was?
The only way I think that this could definitely be remade is they would have to build another shark and not go anywhere near a computer. That's the only way. They'd have to make it exactly the same like in 1975. And you know that's impossible nowadays just because it's probably cheaper to digitally map out a shark instead of building one from scratch.
Yeah. Well, and like Star Wars prequels, I mean.
Right. If they remade this next year, first of all, the shark would talk. It would, you know, I'm going to come get you. There would be weird things like that. There'd probably be a musical, like a music number in there. You got to have a single to put on your soundtrack. There would be a lot of teen stars in it, probably a couple of shark montages. It would be horrible. It would be horrible because I think if you're like I know you guys, I know for sure are into older, you know, type music, like music from the 70s and 80s. We mm-hmm. had Dynamics. So you listen to songs and there were quiet parts and then there were loud parts and then there were quiet parts. And they don't do that now. Now everything is as loud as you could get it. It's, I know I sound like the old man on the front porch, which is exactly where I plan to be.
You're crazy.
That's where I'm going to be when the shark shows up too. I don't think you could make a movie today and say, this is a shark movie. And by the way, you ain't going to see a shark for the first half. I don't think kids would go
impossible.
To that. You know?
Impossible.
Right. Right. Now would you have to, the shark would, you know, well, now what if people want Sharknado or Sharktopus. That's what people want. You know, or a shark with machine gun, you know, and the shark shows up and he shoots people or something. I don't know. I don't think you could have this type of movie with today's audiences. Which is a shame.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the actors in this, you know, I think they were perfect in these roles. Quint, it's just
the best.
Yeah, it's just a great character. Robert Shaw, beautiful acting in this movie. Rob, I know you had brought up to me before about the chalkboard, the fingernails, which everyone hates that, but
that's the first time that we see him to get the, they're having a town meeting basically of what they're going to do with the shark. And, he's sitting at the back of the room and then he just starts scratching his fingernails, which just talking about it right now is making goosebumps on the back of my neck. I hate that sound so much. And it just, you know, you just know that this guy, he's kind of a jerk. And you don't want to like him, but also that first time you meet him, you get the idea that he is the guy that's going to bring in Jaws, but he names his price. And so Zurb, did you, like how much money? I don't remember what all he was doing.
If I can quote, because, I practiced my Quint.
Okay? Absolutely.
If you want to stay alive, then ante up. If you want to play it cheap, be on welfare the whole winter. I don't want any no volunteers. That's not what I said. I don't want no mates. There's just too many captains on this island. 10,000 for me by myself. For that, you'll get the head, the tail, the whole damn thing. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good. Well, Mr. Quint, we'll take that into consideration.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, then he just walks out. He's like,
I'm going to go cut my nails now.
He's not there to haggle. He's not, you know, it's not like Pawn Stars.
No.
You go, you know, well, would you take 1,000? No, he's not. He named his price and he walks out and you know right from that scene that whatever the rest of these, you know, they got all these morons that are coming in from other towns that they think they're going to bag the shark. And when they don't, Brody knows that Quint's the guy that's going to do the job.
Mm-hmm. And I love how Quint always refers to him as Chafe. Okay, Chafe. <He's> always...
Yes, he does.
Chafe, chum the waters again.
Yeah, chum these waters. And that's where you get to see the face. Is that the first time that you get to see
the shark?
When he's chumming the waters, is that the best facial feature you get?
I think so, yeah.
I think that's when we actually get to see him completely. First, the shark, because that's when one of my favorite quotes is when Brody turns and sees the shark come up, and Quint is in the cabin of the ship, and I'm not sure where Hooper was at that point, and he goes
driving the boat. I think he's driving the boat.
Okay,
still.
Yeah. And then Brody goes into Quint and just says, you're going to need a bigger boat. And then they come out and then they see him coming. We see the kind of like an aerial top view of the shark, you know, and that's where they're like, he's a 20 footer. And Quint's like, 25. I can't agree with him. Isn't it? Oh, 25.
Well, I read on IMDb that he actually ad-libbed that line, which has become, I mean, one of the most quotable lines for the movie, that was not in the script, that he, when they actually saw it, he said, you're going to need a bigger boat. And that the timing of it was right after the shark popped up. He said that. And so when they originally showed this to test audiences, people were screaming from the shark and nobody heard his line. So they actually went back and edited that and they put another shot in there to give a little bit of space and they boosted the volume on his line so people would hear it. So
beautiful.
It's another one of those, just funny coincidences that, you know, worked out for him.
And that's a highly repeated line too.
Yes.
That gets used for a lot of things.
So let me ask you this. So we've got Chief Brody, who in the beginning, like I said, he's just trying to do what's right for the people. He doesn't want to just feed this shark to, you know, these people. But I think when the shark, which is called Bruce, when Bruce goes to the pond and, attacks the guy on the little dinghy boat, but his kid Michael and his friends are on their boat and they get knocked over. I think to me that's when it became not even just about safety of Amity, but it became personal. for him to really take care of this problem. And then you have Hooper, who has been researching this for years, has got the scars to show it, as he talks about with Quint on the boat. And then you've got Quint, who you believe, when they're actually going on the Orca to start their hunt, is doing it for the money, right? But when they're on the boat, and there's the famous scene when they're drinking and singing, and then it kind of get like they're comparing the scars, right? And then that's when Quint starts to tell the story of when he was in the Navy and on the USS Indianapolis, and tells a story of being torpedoed by the Japanese, the ship right. going down, and pretty much, what was it, like 3/4 of the crew were killed by sharks. So you think in the beginning that it's all the money. Do you think it's more personal for him as well? Because he does smash the radio at one point when the shark keeps ramming the boat you know, Brody wants to radio, I don't know, for help or what, and he just comes in, smashes the radio, like, we're doing this. So, I mean, do you think it started out as money, or do you think it was always, he has shark jaws in his
Go ahead,
boathouse and everything.
Oh, well, I think, yeah, definitely. It's breaking the radio was the big sign that he did not want anybody else's help in getting this shark. This is going to be his shark. And, it is definitely personal because he's seen shark take 90% of his livelihood, all the way back, 1945 and until 1975, he's spent his life trying to rid the world of the evil sharks that has ruined his life as well. So it's definitely personal.
Yeah. I think you get the idea in that scene, you realize that it's either going to be him or the shark. Mm-hmm. Like one of them is not walking away. Well, one of them can't walk away because it's a shark, but one of them is not walking away from the climax of this film that, he's either going to take this shark out or go down trying.
Mm-hmm. And the boats too, you got Quint's boat. What do you think of Hooper's boat? That thing was insane. I mean, and for 1975, when it's got all the lights on the bottom built into the bottom of the boat, when they're, I forget who the guy was that they were out looking for.
Oh, the guy that they find.
Yeah.
I don't remember either. And I just saw it today. I just remember the floater. That's it.
But when he jumps in and, you know, Brody's like, what are you doing? He's got his scuba gear on. He wants to jump in because they find the broken down fishing boat.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got all the cameras and sonar and all that stuff on the ship. And I think that's when we find out actually that his family is quite wealthy, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you have that dichotomy between him and Quint where, you know, I mean, Quint's boat, you know, it's like, blowing up black smoke and chugging, you know, and it sounds like a, you know, an engine with maybe a lifter off or something, you know, and then you've got, you know, on the opposite side, you got Hooper with all this money and all this stuff. But, you know that none of these guys can catch Jaws by themselves, that they're all going to have to come together and figure out, you know, how to work together, to pull this off.
Yeah, and that little boat proves to do just fine.
It stays together pretty good. It doesn't take the final assault.
Yeah, I mean, and that, the shark is just so powerful. I mean, we see it in the scene where he rips an entire dock off the shore with a couple guys that are trying to.
That, yeah, I love that scene because you've got these two. Guys that are out there, and this is kind of when they put the bounty out for Jaws. And so people are like, I'm going to go catch Jaws, you know? And so these guys are out there and they're on the dock and they've you know, put some bait out with this chain, and all of a sudden the chain. And again, you never see the shark in this scene, but you see, how the shark is affecting things. And so the chain goes out to sea. And, you know, they're like, hey, we got us a shark. And about that time, it just rips this dock in half. And pieces go flying. The guys go into the water. He's being dragged out into the water. And then there's this moment where the dock stops. I mean, because it's going away from the shore. And it stops, and now it's starting to come back towards the shore. And you know Jaws is pulling the dock. Again, a great use of suspense, because we don't see the shark, but we see this dock, and we know that there's something underneath the water coming, you know, towards him. And
yeah. And we you hear the music, too. It's like every time you hear the music, you know he's around. It's him. Because when there's no music, it's not him.
Yeah, yeah. I read a trivia fact that I did not know, and I rewatched this film yesterday. One of the things Spielberg tried to do was remove the color red from the entire film, except for blood. So I read that before rewatching it. And so if you watch the people's, the costumes and the town and the sets, there's not very little, if any, red in the movie. So, when the little boy is attacked, you know, offshore, and you see the red blood in the water, it really jumps out at you.
Yeah, it pops out, definitely.
Yeah. And so there's these little, those cues, like the red blood, or like you said, the soundtrack, which, I mean, it's not complicated. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's just these two notes, and it speeds up. And, when you hear that, you know, it's about to go down, you know?
It was, Jonathan Williams did mention that, he was trying to achieve the sound of a heartbeat in music. And that's what that was supposed to replicate. So what easier way than dun, 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 and then just bring it up, throw in the, I forgot my music theory. The fifth above, dun, 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 and then yeah. that makes your eyebrows go, what the hell? You know, that's what that's for. And, but yeah, that's what he was trying to achieve. He did really well with it.
Yeah. There's, one other scene that I've read quite a bit about, and from two or three different sources that I wanted to talk about. There was some, production shooting that took place away from the actual shooting with the mechanical sharks. And what they had done was lowered a shark tank down in the ocean around real sharks. And they wanted to make the sharks look larger than they really were in real life. So they used little people.
True.
And they got little people to dress up as scuba divers to throw off the scale, you know. And I guess during this, the sharks attacked the cage. And so the footage that ends up in the actual movie is of real sharks really attacking this shark cage. And when they attacked the cage, the scuba divers weren't actually in it. So that was something that they had to go back and change. I mean, they changed that basically on the fly.
Oh, the Hooper scene you're talking about?
Yes, from the script, because he was supposed to be in the cage, but then they had shot this footage of the sharks attacking the cage, and it was empty. So they went back and had Hooper swim out of this cage so that they could, you know, use that footage and splice that in, just because it was so, you know, such good footage. But I don't know. I just like the fact that they like got these you know, little people,
and they got, and they made a little cage too, a smaller version.
Absolutely.
It was really interesting.
That is interesting, and you know, talking about how a lot of the movie with in the water is darker, and that scene was pretty dark in the film. Yesterday, I had posted on Facebook that my daughter had an hour and a half gymnastics class. So I thought, you know what, this is perfect time for me to finish the second half of the movie, and I'll sit in the van, watch it, and take some notes. And that scene, it was really dark in the van. You know, it's a crappy little LCD screen that's built in, so I couldn't tell what the end result was of that attack on the cage. And not seeing this movie since I was a kid, I forgot. So I was pleasantly surprised when Hooper ends up popping up next to the wreckage and next to Chief Brody, because I was like, oh crap, man, I didn't remember him dying. I like that character. So it was kind of nice.
Well, even though it was way before any of our times, if you remember a show called Sea Hunt, it was reminiscent of that when he swam down and hid behind the rocks. And every single time I saw that, I remembered, even when I was a kid, I remembered that because my dad used to watch Sea Hunt all the time. And it always just seemed to click with that. I don't know why, but it did. And I'm sorry to waste your time with that information. But, but it's just something that really meant something to me.
Hold on, Rob. Zerv's having a moment.
That's all right. I'll be
that's
back.
Okay.
Hey, I keep checking out the window to make sure the shark's not out there. So I'm okay. Now, this movie, as we talked about, brought in almost $500 million. And so do you know what happens when a movie brings in almost $500 million?
You get a lot of kid toys.
Well, you do, but you also make sequels because everybody wants to make $500 million again. And so I actually own the Jaws DVD box set, which has all four movies.
Oh my.
And, usually, you know, they're like, if you have, all six Star Wars films together, most people don't like them. Like I like the first one the best and the second one a little less and the third one a little less and the fourth one a little less and the fifth one a little less. But in Jaws, boy howdy. Is there a decrease as you go forward? I mean, Jaws 2, I mean, first of all, I don't feel like we're spoiling a movie that, as Zurb said, next year is the 40th anniversary. If you haven't seen Jaws by now, by all means,
shame on
it.
You.
Right. Yeah. but for a movie in which the great white shark explodes, you would not expect three sequels. And yet somehow there is a Jaws 2, which is not Jaws. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. We have Jaws 3, which hit right in the middle of the early 80s during the 3D phase. You know, we had, there was Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D. There was a whole bunch of 3D films that came out. And so we have Jaws 3D. Jaws 3D is a great movie if you like terrible cheesy movies and you want to drink like every time something silly happens. That's the one. If you've not seen it, it's the one that takes place in the water park.
Yeah. I saw that in the theaters.
Yeah.
In 3D oh, theaters. Did you really? Yeah, oh yeah. God, I would love to see that in theater. Yeah. So you've got, the Jaws and the Jaws gets in, you know, basically SeaWorld more or less. And then we find out that's not even Jaws, that's baby Jaws. And then Mama Jaws comes and, oh, that movie. I love terrible movies and that is a terrible movie. But not as terrible as Jaws 4, unbelievably. And Jaws 4 is the one where I don't even know what's going on in that. It's like, first of all, you've got Brody's wife and I think everybody's dead or has left the franchise by this point. And so she, you know, moves to get, because, and I don't know what took her four films to move away, you know, because the shark is literally at this point, like hacked into her bank account and it's like, it took her identity. It, you know, mugged her in an alley. So I don't know what there was left. So she moves to the Bahamas, and the shark follows her and then like starts seeking out her family members and killing, like, it knows who's in her family and kills those people. So that one is just, you know.
I never saw that.
Jaws 3D is a bad movie that's fun. And Jaws The Revenge is a bad movie that's bad.
I did see Jaws 3D. I did not see The Revenge either. But it sounds, believe it or not, I do want to see it now that you've talked about it.
You know, there are scenes where when Jaws attacks people, then it focuses around Brody's wife. She has moved away and her son has now become a chief of police.
Oh, okay.
Right. Following in dad's footsteps. Right. Sure. And Jaws is after him.
Which son is it? Michael or Sean?
You know what? They're both in the movie, I think, because I seem to remember they both get it.
Cause Michael is the head of the like SeaWorld or something. And Dennis Quaid, right?
Right, right.
In 3D. I was just wondering if...
I don't know. But what's weird is, like, whenever the shark eats somebody, it, like, has a flash to Brody's wife, who has, like, a psychic moment. Like, she knows when the shark eats somebody. It's very weird. It's like she has a psychic connection to... And I don't even know who it is at this point. It's obviously not Jaws, because they blew up Jaws. And then it wasn't Jaws, the son of Jaws, or whoever was in 2 and 3. And I don't even know.
It's that bumblebee tuna fish, I think.
It's Jabberjaw.
Yeah, something like that.
Zurb, can you do me a favor?
Sure.
And instead of watching that, could you just record another episode of Look It?
For the revenge?
Yeah,
or just, for the 3D?
Just skip revenge and just record like the time that you would sit down and waste your time watching it. Just record another Look It.
Okay, I will. I understand. Okay, I thought you meant do a Look It on Jaws Revenge. I was like, oh no. I'll try my best.
Now, the other point that you brought up, Sean, is yes, when you do have a $500 million movie, you get merchandise. And I actually cut this right off of Wikipedia. And this plays into what we talked about Jaws being a big summer blockbuster. It says here that it was probably at the time the most elaborate array of tie-ins of any film to date. That included the soundtrack, t-shirts, plastic tumblers, a book about the making of the movie, the book the movie was based on, beach towels, blankets, shark costumes, toy sharks, hobby kits, iron-on transfers, games, posters, shark tooth necklaces, sleepwear. Who wants to sleep in a Jaws thing? Who would traumatize their children? Water pistols and more. And then there was a shark game. Did you find out something about – and I had this game, but you did some research on this game?
Yeah. We actually – my brother had this game. Zurb, did you see that game that I put in the notes? It is the Jaws game where basically it was a plastic shark. I'd say it was probably maybe about a foot long, and the jaw would open, and it had rubber bands on it.
Yes, I had that too. As a matter of fact, I totally forgot about that.
I've been looking for that game at my mother's, but sadly I believe it is gone away.
Yard sailed or something.
Yeah, but for anyone listening, if it like I said, it was like a plastic shark, about a foot long, and the mouth would open, and then they would have because in the scene when Hooper cuts open the shark, you know, there's a license plate in there. There's
like
a beer can. So in this toy, you'd put there was like a plastic anchor and I think a skull and just little trinkets you'd put in. And the object of the game, because there was rubber bands on the jaw, you would take turns, and you had like a little long post with a hook, and you would scoop things out. And as you took things out, the resistance was less, so the jaw would snap shut eventually.
Right.
So it was a really cool.
I totally forgot about that.
You know what they should have put in there was a naked 18-year-old.
but for the children, they would have to, you know, fuzz her out.
So. Yeah. Well, it would have little like Velcro attachable black bars.
There we go. Yeah.
Why is she wearing a black square bikini?
Right. You're like, Chrissy, hang on. We're coming for you.
So I looked these up on eBay, old trusty eBay, where you can find anything from your childhood and pay way more than what you should. I found a couple. So I found one. It had the original box, but it didn't have any of the items that went into the shark's mouth. And that was $23. You could spend a little more. You could get one complete. It was $55. And then you could buy one for $270 sealed.
Wow.
Mint condition. So I wish the $23 one had all the parts because I'd be really tempted.
Yeah.
But you know, you could buy the parts for, like, they were selling, like, separate parts for $4 a piece.
I think a shark will eat anything. So you could just find stuff around your house and put in there. You know, you're like, oh, I got the toilet paper roll.
Yeah.
I can just take
all my Star Wars heads and throw them in there.
No, there you go. No. It's like the rancor of the sea.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And I'm actually going to go over to my mother's, I think, next weekend one day and really start doing some treasure hunting down there. But another thing that I came across, if you know, Rob, if you like to buy stuff on the show and I like to try and maybe pressure you into some stuff, I think I got something that would look really good in your recording room.
I've got eBay open right now. What is it?
Okay. there is a link in the notes if you want to take it, but it's an original movie poster. Never been folded, only been rolled up, and it's only $1,500.
That's it.
Yeah.
Wow. And, you know, I feel like I could get a great white shark for that. For $1,500.
Yeah. Then you got to deal with, you know,
feeding it, 18-year-old girls.
Yeah.
License bands. Plates. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll go for the poster then.
Yeah.
Sounds like less maintenance.
I'm sure maybe you could find one that has been folded up a few times for maybe $500. I don't know.
I want one with a shark bite out of it.
Yeah. And then there's a number of paperback novels that you can find, $3 to $5, $10, $20-some, depending on the condition of them. Now, have either one of you guys read the novels, or have you ever read it?
No, I have not.
No, and how about you, Rob?
I have, but gosh, it's been a lot. I mean, this is probably high school days. I do remember that it is significantly different than the film, you know. The one thing that gets cited a lot is that in the book, Hooper actually has an affair with Brody's wife.
Right.
And so that, you know, when they came in, I think the screenplay, I think, was kind of a mess. You know, Peter Benchley had never written a screenplay before, so he took the first shot at it. Then there were a couple of other edits. There were some that were came in to, you know, give the characters a bit more and make them more likable. There were versions that, and eventually they went through and they stripped. You know, I think at some point, it's definitely a character-based film, but the real star, I mean, the person, the thing that everybody wants to know about is the shark, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you got all these weird little side things like that affair and some other, there was a lot of stuff about the mayor and all that, that just, you know, that's not what people want. Is you want that second half of the film where these three guys are going out and either they're getting the shark or the shark's getting them, you know? And so I think they, you know, as far as turning it into a film, they did a really good job of stripping a lot of that stuff out.
Well, yeah, and you know, most of the time people say, you know, the book is way better than the film or whatever. I mean, I'm a big Harry Potter fan. I love the movies, but I thought the books were amazing, more descriptive, a lot more going on. But in this situation, like you said, you want to know about the shark and the trio that is after the shark. And that's what I was saying in the beginning, where I like Hooper's character, but in the book, from what I had researched and found out, like, you know, I don't want to hear about all that side stuff. I mean, I guess it would put some good tension between characters, but I liked the gel of Hooper and Brody, and then that little kind of headbutting that you have between Quinn and Hooper.
Sure, yeah. And in the book, I do know that basically Jaws just succumbs to his injuries from, you know, smashing into the cage and into the boat and being hit with the barrels, and then at the end of the book, he just closes his eyes and dies, which is probably more realistic than getting his head blown off.
You mean it's more realistic than him swimming around with the air tank like a cigar in his mouth waiting to be shot?
Hey, how you doing? Got a light for this.
That's the Jaws remake where he's like Nightmare on Elm Street. He shows up and does one-liners, you know.
Talking like Bob Hope.
Mind if I take a bite out of this? Exactly. Yeah, cha-cha-cha-cha.
Take my wife. No, really, take my wife.
I want to tell you. You're really going to. Now here it is. I have to tell you that
we got to get the Christopher Tuba to draw some good character shirts.
We do need a good Jaws thing. Yeah, let me show my way out the door, soul. All right, that was a stretch. Sorry, So
Rochester.
I barely know her.
Oh God.
Let's talk about video games, because I love video games. I love arcade games. 1975, the year of Jaws, is also the year that there was a lot of. It turns out, you know, you can license the name Jaws. You could copyright certain things, but you can't copyright a shark, the idea of a shark. And so there were a few unlicensed. There were a lot of unlicensed shark games. There was Shark Attack for the Atari 2600, Shark Hunter for the Odyssey 2. There was a 3D handheld shark game by Tomytronic. But in 1975, the same year as Jaws, Atari released a game that was supposed to be called Jaws, but they renamed it as Shark Jaws. And the name Jaws is in all capital letters. So it's Shark and then all capitals Jaws. And it's a 1975 arcade game. It's pretty primitive. You are a scuba diver and you have to catch these little fish, and there's a great white shark chasing you. And there's not a whole lot of these around. It's a pretty old game.
Well, what about the, I put a note here, but, obviously you didn't like it cause you erased it. So I don't remember the name.
Oh, I didn't see it.
But there was,
I guess you're going to say it anyway.
Yeah. Well, I don't know the name of the game, but it was in the movie. There was a kid playing it on the boardwalk, I think, or,
I didn't erase it. I didn't see it, but, in the movie, I think they play, they're playing computer space, aren't they?
No, it was Shark something.
Shark Attack, I thought.
Was it? That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. I think it was Shark Attack.
All right.
I remember that. I saw that today.
Oh.
So, yeah.
I was like, let me put this in the show notes, and I'll ask Rob if that was a real game, and where did it go? It's not on there.
I didn't take it out on purpose. I don't know what happened.
It must have been when you were updating the network.
Oh. Right. This is, you know what? Things go crazy when I'm on vacation and I start in on the updating.
I lost some hair recently.
That's probably. Yeah, I'm going to put that on the shark.
Okay.
In 87, we get the first game that's just called Jaws for the NES, and people were really excited about that. However, that game is based on Jaws 4, which we just told you is the worst Jaws movie of all time. It's a terrible game, and I went through a list of reviews. The highest review I could find for it was 4 out of 10, and most reviews that I found give it 2 out of 10. If you're waiting for me to tell you a great Jaws one, I'd skip the Nintendo one. And then a couple of years later, there was Jaws, the computer game, which they actually renamed. It says the computer game to let people know that this is not the same as the NES game, which was terrible. And this is out for a lot of systems, Commodore, the Amiga, the Atari ST. And it's kind of a fun game. You go through different scenes in the ocean and you have to like build this thing that will kill Jaws, and you have to find parts of this machine. There's like 10 parts of it. So it's kind of fun. Then there was a game called Universal Studios Theme Parks Adventure, released in 2001 for the GameCube. And it has different parts, everything that's in Universal Studios, like the Back to the Future ride is in it, the E.T., Jurassic Park, all the stuff from Universal Studios. And there's a part based on Jaws. You know, they have the Jaws ride, or used to. I guess it's gone now, in Universal Studios. And so you're in the back of a boat, and you're throwing the barrels at Jaws, trying to keep him from eating your boat. IGN, if you're familiar with that website, gave it a 3 out of 10 and said, quote, "It has terrible graphics and is very boring." UGO. Right, I know.
So you're saying there's a chance.
At least it's not 2 out of 10.
Right.
UGO rated it 78, number 78 on their list of the worst video games of all time. Okay. So again, Jaws does not have a good track record when it comes to video games. Now, there were a couple that have come out over the last 5 years that are not bad. There's Jaws Unleashed. which came out for in 2006. It was Windows on the Xbox and the PS2. And it's an open world kind of game, kind of like Grand Theft Auto. You know, you could go anywhere, in the ocean. But in this game, you're Jaws. So in all these other games, you're, you know, Quint or Brody. You're a guy driving the boat. You're a scuba diver. You're always, you know, Shark is the bad guy. And now, by the time you get to 2006, now you get to be the Shark. And so, so you go around. So that game is okay. There's a lot of, there's actually some stealth levels in that game where you have to like hide as Jaws and wait for people to come by and eat them and stuff. So it's a little weird. There is Jaws, the Ultimate Predator, which came out in 2010, and that's out. It was for the Wii. I believe it also has a 3DS release. And that game is kind of fun because you get to be Jaws and you use the Wiimote. So you have the little nunchuck thing and you move around as Jaws and you go up and down and stuff. And then you use the Wiimote to attack people. So I don't know. It's kind of weird, but I guess you could get in a bathtub and kind of splash around to, if you wanted to have the full Jaws experience. But I sent you a link to this last one, and I didn't even know about this one, but a couple of years ago they released Jaws Revenge, and that's out for Android and for iOS. And it's kind of like those games. What's that game? It's not Flappy Bird, but what was the there was a bird game.
Where Angry Birds?
No, you press a button and you would like make the bird go down, and then it would automatically jump up like on ramps and stuff. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Yeah, it was amazing. No. You should have played it. It's so great. I can't think of the name, but it's like that where basically it's just a one touch kind of control. So whenever you press the screen, Jaws goes up, and so you can make him jump out of the water. And this game is gory and a blast. I played this today on the iPad. I downloaded this on the iPad, and I got a combo for knocking a speedboat off into the air and then eating three people in the air and doing a flip. There is blood everywhere. We have come a long, long way from that first 1975 black and white Jaws game. I mean, you could get multiple death combos. I got a bonus for just biting a guy's head off. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And my kid's playing it right now in the other room. So,
oh goodness.
Yeah. But, go ahead.
It's the achievements. I was just going to say, it's just the achievements. That's all it is. They just, and how gory they can make them achievements for you. That's it.
Yeah. And I did notice on this last one, this Jaws Revenge, you can buy upgrades for Jaws and things. And of course, those things all cost real money.
Oh, of course. The in-app purchases, the lovely things that they are. We'll have to send this one over to our friends over at Android App Addicts. Let them review this one.
Tiny Wings is the game I was trying to think of. Yeah. So there was a series of games that all had just a one touch control kind of thing. And Tiny Wings, you know, you press the screen and your bird goes down. It's like you're pulling him down with gravity. And then when you let go, he springs back up. And so this is like the inverse of that. When you press the screen, Jaws jumps up out of the water and eats people's faces. Fun for all ages, I say.
In 2007, there was a I was a big Roller Coaster Tycoon fan, and when they came out with a 3D version of the game for computer, and in the Soaked edition, there was a Jaws set up just like in Universal, so you could set your rides up next to where Jaws the shark would come out on the side. Yeah, and it's pretty neat. You ride your coaster, and then you hit the trigger point, and then up came Jaws out of the water and went and then went back down into the water.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
You know, I've never been to Universal Studios. I've never been to any of those type of, we went this year to the Warner Brothers studio tour, but, I remember seeing footage of that Jaws thing, like a TV special where your boat goes over and then the fake Jaws, you know, would jump out of the water. Mm-hmm. And man, that looked amazing. Oh, I would so have loved to see it. Oh, did you get to see it?
No, I didn't get to see it, and they closed it down in 2012. I think January 2012 is when they did one final run with it. And it was sad. I did go to Universal, and that's one thing we didn't get a chance to ride, and I really wish I did. I really wish I did. I missed my chance.
Yeah, I've seen some YouTube footage of people riding or whatever, and it just looks so cool, you know.
Yeah.
There will always be, in my opinion, I know they could do amazing things with digital effects. I know that they can create, you know, characters and ships and worlds and universes and all these things, mm-hmm. With the CGI and computer effects. But man, there's something about, you know, that scene where Jaws is eating Quint. Yeah. And that is a real, I mean, obviously it's not a real shark, but it's a, I mean, as far as we're concerned, it is a mechanical shark on that set, and he's going into it, you know, and there's nothing, there's no CGI that looks like that.
No, you can't replicate that.
They used to kill people so much better back in the day.
Well, those are some good games that you brought.
Yeah, I feel like, and I think you could probably own all of them for a dollar each.
I'm sure you could.
I don't think any of them are
Or you could probably expensive. get them on some sort of ROM or something.
You know what? When we get together, I will put one copy of each of these into that damn Jaws toy, and I'll let you stick the little stick in there, and you could whichever game you can pull out of his belly, you get to keep.
Oh man, I got to get one of those Jaws toys. I got to find one.
God, you know what it reminds me of is you know, like when I want to say girls. I'm sure it's boys too, but I always see teenage girls that have the braces and they have the big rubber bands.
I was just thinking the same thing.
It looks just like that. It's like a big open mouth, yeah, with rubber bands on the side.
Oh, I actually had to wear those.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. Oh, man. And that's what I was thinking about when you were bringing it back. And I was like, oh, man.
My son's at that stage right now.
Yeah, and then, you know, the dentist comes at you with this long stick and a little hook on it. You have this flashback that he reaches in to fix your teeth. He pulls out a license plate. Exactly.
Oh, man.
Well, it could happen.
Yeah. This movie made me realize that doing this podcast, it's fun. I love doing it, like getting together with you, Rob, and just hanging out, you know, having guests on. But, you know, it's like we're watching these movies mainly is what we're always doing pretty much. You know, somewhere a movie like A Cloak and Dagger is a movie that I loved as a kid and still love to today. Then you have movies that, you know, maybe I'm just kind of like, meh, they're okay. Maybe I liked them better as a kid. Now I watch them like, whatever. Children mm-hmm. of the Corn, last week's episode, you know, we did that with my wife. It was one of those movies that I did not like as a kid because it scared me. And I watched it, and it was fun to watch it with my wife and to talk with you about it. But this is a movie that, again, you know, I watched as a kid, got me all creeped out about being anywhere in any kind of water. But watching it now, it just makes you realize that there's a lot of movies I want to watch again now as an adult. I really, really enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed the acting, the characters, the less is more effect to this movie. So it's just good. The podcast, we experience different things with different movies, the results of them. So this is definitely something that I was thinking today of making a document of movies that I'd like to get on either DVD or Blu-ray for a collection. And this is definitely going to be one of the first ones I put in that list of movies that I would eventually like to put into my own little library.
Yeah, you know, I'm a huge fan. I've told you this before about special effects, behind the scenes footage, the making of movies. I always felt like if I grew up like on either coast, you know, where they make movies, that I would have gotten involved in that. Unfortunately, there's not a huge need for special effects and people that can build mechanical sharks in Oklahoma. I love the, if you get, this is definitely one worth picking up on DVD or, I know there's a Blu-ray, and I'm sure, you know, like what Zurb was saying, there's probably will be a 40th anniversary release next year. But it's definitely worth picking up just for the extra features. There's a lot of, there's a making of and a featurette and some stuff like that. One of the things I started doing a few years ago, kind of, piggybacking on what you said was, I started looking at the AFI, the American Film Institute, and they have all these different lists of films. Like they have the top 100 comedies and the top 100, science fiction movies. And, they have, by the way, the top 100 thrilling American films of all time. And Jaws is number 2 on that list, mm-hmm. right behind Psycho, which, I might even have to debate that, because I'm not sure that Psycho has aged, as well as Jaws. You know, Psycho, and of course it's a few years older, so it's black and white, but I have watched Psycho with my kids and they both went and took showers after that and went to bed and did not scare them in the slightest. You know, we watched Jaws about a month before we took a cruise to Alaska. And my kids wouldn't get in the hot tub. So, I mean, the situations, the fear that comes from Jaws, I think has aged perfectly. You know, I mean, I didn't feel like there was anything. I mean, obviously, you know, that maybe some of the cars are outdated or, some of the bathing suits or the clothing or something. But I mean, as far as the entire plot, everything that happened in this film, I feel like it could have happened last week.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Feel the same way. I'm going to repeat what Sean said. I watch this movie now, and what really sticks out to me the most is, like, listening to the 1945 story from Quint. When I was a kid, I would fast forward if I was watching it. Even in my teens, I wanted to see the shark scenes.
Yep.
You know, and now I find myself really digging deep into the storyline and what they're saying to each other and how they interact with each other to get to the point of taking care of the shark. And it helps you understand those characters even more. And this movie is really good at portraying all of that.
I have picked up lots. I probably own at least 100 DVDs that I haven't watched. Because I would find them on sale or I'd find them at garage sales and I would, you know, say, oh, I'd like to see that someday, or that looks good. And I pick it up and I put it in the stack. But just like what you guys have said, what I have really been focusing on the last few years is not the movies that I've never seen, but the ones that I, saw as a kid. And that there are, you know, there were parts of it. Like I just watched, I would just watch Blade Runner last weekend with my kids. And I don't know that I've seen that since I was a kid. And now, of course, I watch it with my kid, and someday, you know, maybe in a few years, he'll watch it again, or maybe someday he'll watch it with his kid, you know, but, and there are lots and lots of deep, philosophical things in that movie that as a kid, you're like, oh, cool. They're shooting, you know, bad androids and they got flying spaceships. And so you get it on that level. But then when you revisit it as an adult, you know, you get to see it at a different level. And exactly. Jaws is exactly that way. Yeah. It is a huge character piece. You know, that's, I mean, more or less, that's all it is. And you could even go as far as to say that, you know, you could look at it this way, that when they're hunting Jaws, especially Quint, you know, he's facing his own demons, and well, unfortunately his demons show up and eat him, but, but you know what I mean? Like he has, like, this is 30 years of pent up, you know, revenge that he's had sitting on his chest. Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, when you get those speeches like that, it is funny because as a kid, just like what you said, it's the most boring part of the film. And you're right. Like, you know, World War II, who cares next, you know? And then now when you're watching it, you're like, you get this whole view of this, a person on the screen turns into a human being.
Yeah.
You know, before they were just a guy that was, like Sean said, you know, he's in it for the money and you don't know why. And then by the end, I think he would have done it. He would have done it without the money, you know?
True. Very true.
Well, I look forward to watching more movies like this where I can appreciate them more now as an adult. So we'll have to,
you know,
really...
what has some deep stuff in it is Jaws 4. If you haven't seen it,
I was
that,
thinking Pee Wee's Big Adventure. anyways, we're going to wrap this one up. I think that we definitely give this one 3 thumbs up for a rewatch. Definitely tell someone who hasn't seen it in a while to sit down, watch it again and appreciate it. So, but Zurb, thank you very much for.
Oh yeah,
no, thank you guys. That's great.
And really joining the network too.
And thank you for that as well. I appreciate being a part of it. I've got a lot of great colleagues on that site too, and I highly suggest listening to those podcasts as well. They're wonderful.
All right. Well, why don't you give out some plugs, any Twitters or anything you want to?
Plug? Well, I'm Zurbinatorland on Twitter and on Facebook, and I'm. I don't think you say www anymore, do you? So double W's. And you go to zurbinator.wordpress.com for all the shows.
Yeah, because aside from the shows that are going to be on the network, you do have some other shows. Great stuff. I like Getting Ready with Shell.
Oh, thank you. That's her idea because she has a lot to vent about, and I love antagonizing her. So we talk about pop culture and current events. There's a show about ghost stories that I've written myself called Spiderwebs. One about holidays called Holiday Cheer. Another one called Zurbin Tunes, which talks about independent music and independent musicians. And, oh gosh, what else? The Look It, the 80 to 89, and I think that's all of them. Oh, my movie collection. Yeah.
Yes.
The other show is My Movie Collection. We talk about movies.
Yeah, so go check them all out.
Yeah, do you just like rotate through? Like, do you do different ones each week or how do you do that?
It seems
like a lot to keep up with.
It is a lot to keep up with. And I'm missing my main sidekick, my buddy Joe, who lives back in Virginia. But just try to get him done when I can. I think that's the best way to do it.
Well, definitely go check those out. And you won't be disappointed.
Thank you.
I also want to say thank you to a previous guest we had on, and you probably know him. You'll know his artwork. He did a lot of work for The Retroist, but Christopher Tupa was super awesome and gave us a new logo, album artwork, so you'll be seeing that on the website and should be on your feed. Well, maybe not unless it's updated in your cache, but anyways, he did some awesome work for us. So we really appreciate that. Go to ctupa.com. Check out a lot of his other artwork there, or you could follow him on Twitter @tupa01. Check him out. See a lot of his artwork. Really, really talented guy and just an all-around really, really good dude. So thank you to Christopher for hooking us up. Also, if you're going to buy yourself, say you're going to the beach, you got to get some beach chairs. You got to get some shark repellent. And you don't want to go to the store. You're going to order online. You're going to go to Amazon. Why not help us out a little bit? It won't cost you anything more. Just go to throwbackreviews.com/Amazon. That's our affiliate. And Amazon will thank us. And we thank you for using that. And feedback. We would love to get some feedback. What you thought of this movie when you watched it, or what you think of the show, maybe some movies or something you want us to watch. But you can send us an email at feedback@throwbackreviews.com. You can even call. We have a voice line, 716-243-2709. You can call that and leave us a message. Just say hi.
If we get... I don't want to set it too low. If we get 5 feedbacks, either email or voicemail, before the next show, I will wrestle a shark.
Does mine count or no?
you can't leave 5 messages.
Okay, then.
You can leave one of the 5. It has to happen on dry land.
Okay. I was going to have Quint call you, I think.
That'd be great.
Thought this show was great. Yeah.
So, Rob, what about you? Any closing words, bud?
I don't think so. I think, and this movie is a certified classic. If you have, I can't imagine people haven't seen Jaws. If you haven't seen Jaws, wait until about a week before your summer vacation. Wait until you're about to take that cruise, or you're going to go swimming or something like that. throw old Jaws there in the DVD player and watch that. And unless you have an abundance of alcohol and a bad sense of humor, then watch Jaws 3 or Jaws 4. But and Sean and I have joked before, we are both grown men. We are both adults with grown-up jobs and wives and families. And we have left each other messages in the middle of the night, afraid that Bigfoot is out our window or that, you know, like if you don't hear from me in the morning, I think I may have been abducted by aliens. And so this is a movie that it will still scare you. I mean, 40 years later, and it is still it's just a wonderful movie. It's a great movie.
Yes. What he said.
And it will keep you from taking a bath for a week.
Or in Rob's case, if you're on vacation, that'll keep you from taking one for the week,
too. Well, I'm blaming it on the shark, right?
All right, guys. Well, definitely another good show. I thank you both for coming on and talking to me again this week. So, until next time, thanks for listening. If you'd like to contact the show, you can send an email to feedback@throwbackreviews.com or call 716-243-2709 and leave a voicemail. You can also find us on Facebook, we're Throwback Reviews Podcast, or on Twitter @Throwback Review. Don't forget to head over to the Throwback Network, where you can find more great retro-themed podcasts. Go to throwbacknetwork.net. And as always, thanks to Pixelate for the intro and closing music. Find more of his music at soundcloud.com/peachypixel8. See, I thought it was just something you were doing in post to make the sound like that.
Speaking of post, you got your your dog special.
Yeah.
Sorry. You can mark that. You can cut that out. Sorry.
Thanks, Rob.
No problem. A little extra work for you.